Larry Allen is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. He writes the Week Ahead newsletter every week. And one item in your newsletter this week is titled, GSA Proposed Rule is a Small Carrot with a Big Stick. I guess the good news here is that at least there is a carrot. It's not all stick. What is the carrot in this proposed rule, Larry, and what's the stick?
Francis, the carrot is something that industry has wanted for well over 20 years, and that is taking away a major trigger of the GSA schedule's price reductions clause. This would be the basis of award trigger that requires companies to track their schedule price against a commercial customer price during the conduct of the contract to make sure that the GSA schedule price stays reasonable. And this has been a major hassle for contractors. It's a big time burner, a lot of expense involved with this, and so doing away with it is something that industry would ordinarily be very happy about. But, as they say, there's another shoe, and the shoe is the stick. In exchange for that, GSA would expect contractors to capture, format, and report transactional data on each and every GSA schedule sale. That's a tremendous expense, especially for small businesses. And when you think that, well, small businesses are the companies that comprise about 70% of the contract holders and the companies that do fully one-third of all scheduled business, that's not an idle concern. But even for large businesses, it's very expensive to put those types of systems in, and there are some downsides, really, for the government as well about having every price be transparent. It's not all upside for the government. Certainly, there's a drive to lower prices by capturing all of this data. But the reality, Francis, is that companies know that everybody's going to see every one-off discount. There are going to be fewer one-off discounts.
Larry, you and I have talked about the concept of the prices paid portal, and I wonder if the same issue that we talked about then applies here, and that is, I'm not sure that we have a sense of how GSA would or could add context to the information that the companies submit to be able to say, in this case, we paid X dollars for this. In this other case, this other agency paid X dollars plus 3%. But they didn't just get that. They got some services or they got some other consideration for that additional 3%. Do we have a sense yet of how that might apply here? Or are those the kinds of things that we can expect to see maybe in the comments that close for this in the next couple of weeks or maybe at the public meeting April 17th?
Oh, I think you'll definitely get comments along those lines, Francis. And, you know, to your example, that's certainly one way things can work. With somebody getting extra services bundled together in a solution that causes a company to give extra points. But that's just one of a number of scenarios that can be put in here that really make it hard in any price comparison portal to give accurate pictures. One of the things I've been telling people is, look, if you go out and buy a Christmas tree on December 20th, you're going to get one price. If you want a Christmas tree on December 26th, you're going to get a very different price, and it's going to be the same type of thing with this prices paid portal. And the information that would be captured under this proposed rule is going to populate the prices paid portal. The Christmas tree example, Francis, is kind of an obvious one, but it still makes the point that there are a number of factors that go into company pricing decisions, time of the year, time of their business cycle, extra inventory, any one of a number of factors that are difficult for any database, not just GSAs, to capture unless you're going to allow for explanations. And it's tough for people to look at explanations. I think the idea behind the prices paid portal is to do a spreadsheet type comparison, and that's not really going to lend itself to accurate accurate pricing information.
Larry Allen's the president of Allen Federal Business Partners and writes the Week Ahead newsletter. Another item in your newsletter is actually pretty good news for the IT schedules. You have some Bloomberg numbers here that show that Schedule 70 is still the largest, it says, central contract through which information technology solutions are acquired in the federal government. Does that make Schedule 70 kind of a make or break if you want to sell IT?
Well, it certainly continues to be a very important part of anybody's IT contracting approach in the government. Even when you have dozens of other competing contract vehicles, Francis, and ones that get a lot of ink, deservedly so, NASA SEWP, GSA's own Alliant program, to name two, the fact that the schedule continues to capture almost a fourth of the federal IT spend that goes through indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts is very significant. You know, one of the things I put in my newsletter is the old Yogi Berra quote, it's so crowded nobody goes there anymore. And that's the same thing with the IT schedule. People kind of say, well, there's not a lot of shiny and new with that schedule. There's not a lot of luster. But the fact is, it's still the largest central IT contract by far. And it's going to be a little while before somebody seriously challenges that position.
Bloomberg posited that perhaps Alliant or one of the Megamax at the Pentagon might catch the Schedule 70. You don't think so?
The GSA IT schedule, Francis, still does over $13 billion a year. That's a very high number. Yeah. It's products and services. So even if you look at some of the larger contracts that compete with it, like GSA's Alliant. Alliant generated a lot of business last year, but a lot of business was $3.7 billion, almost $10 billion less than was generated on the IT schedule. I don't see any contract taking on the schedule. The SEWP contract does an excellent job, but remember, the SEWP contract only captures products. There are no real service solutions by design on SEWP, and the schedules has both.
That $13-14 billion number is, I think the technical term for that is LOM, lots of money.
Well, certainly things that you and I could find fun things to do with, Francis.
No doubt about that. The other item that you have in the newsletter this week is something that you and I have talked about on a number of occasions, and I wonder why it is that you think it is necessary to again warn people that when you're the incumbent, you can't get lazy. You have to keep your edge in order to keep that contract.
Well, the instant case was a contract, an article that I had seen, Francis, about a Federal Communications Commission contractor. They had been an incumbent for a large part of the FCC's voice business, number registry, I believe it was. And now the FCC has basically signaled to this company that their tenure as the incumbent is up. And that's probably a surprise to this one company that's had that business for over a decade. And now that contract represents fully half of the company's sales.
Ouch.
Right, as Mark Amtower is wont to say, hello. And so my point is to use that example in saying, look, there's certainly a value in incumbency in the federal market, but don't think it's the holy grail that it used to be. It's certainly true that if you're being competitive and offering a high level of service and there's good customer satisfaction, that you are better off as an incumbent than as an outsider on a recompete. But there are plenty of contractors that don't understand that, Francis. They think the business that has been theirs will thus now and forevermore shall be theirs. And that's an odd time when a competing company, particularly a smaller or medium-sized business that's anxious to make a name for itself in the federal market, can come in and take your cheese.